Hey, good morning, everybody. How are you? Again? I'm still up here. So here we are. We're the last week of the Godflix series. And all month long, we've been looking at some of these really big summer movies because we think that God has something to say through movies, and through really good movies especially. And this is a really good movie. I just want to say right now before I start, I'm a Hufflepuff. Okay? So if I knew that we were making fun of the Hufflepuffs, I wouldn't have worn my scarf. But no, just kidding. I'm just kidding. But I'm going to take it off because it's really hot up here. Where's my wife? Hi, here. So, there you go. Thanks. She's a Hufflepuff, too. That's where we met, in school. I just want to start. Before I begin, I want to say a quick couple disclaimers. First is, we're talking about the last movie in the Harry Potter series, and I know that there are some people who, like, live in a cave and haven't read any of the Harry Potter books, and haven't seen any of the movies. And like with all of the movies we talk about this summer, I'm going to try to keep it kind of spoiler-free. But, you know, like, if you need me to... Ward was complaining to me, Ward. If you need me to say, like, spoiler alert, you can put your fingers in your ears. You can do that, too. The other thing is that we're talking about the last book, which is called Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. And so this is a dark movie. This isn't a kid's movie. It's a PG-13 movie, but it's really sort of, like, mature in its theme. So today we're going to be talking about endings, and we're going to be talking about big endings, like death and things like that. So if you were waiting for a moment to send your kids to the wiggle room, we have a great staff back there and a lot of fun, and kids are welcome back there. You can do that. If you think they can handle it, great, no problem. They're welcome to stay, too. I just wanted to put that out there so nobody gets mad at me later for the things that we're talking about. So just as a show of hands, how many people have seen the final movie? Yes. 38 people have seen the final movie. No, a lot of people have seen the final movie. It broke a ton of box office records. It's probably the biggest movie of the entire summer. And I know that even if you're not, like, deep into Harry Potter, how many of you know somebody, it could be you, how many of you know somebody who is in, like, way into Harry Potter, like, to an unhealthy degree? Okay, almost everybody, yeah. And someone you know really loves Harry Potter because it's become a part of our cultural subconscious, you know? And in case you haven't seen it, quick story, boy leads a miserable life, finds out he's a wizard, goes to a school for wizards, and turns out not only is he a wizard, but he's like the most important wizard ever, and he has to fight the forces of evil to protect the wizarding world. And so that's the short version of it. But now all that is coming to an end, both the books and the movies, and for a lot of people in the movie, that world, a lot of that world is coming to an end. So we're going to talk about endings, and no matter what endings you've experienced or maybe something you've been going through lately, maybe we can air that out, maybe we can talk about it together in a healthy way, in a positive way, with hope, with good things. So I've got this whiteboard here, and I thought we'd start like pretending that we're in a classroom, because Harry Potter takes place in a school, and look, we're in a school. This is the first time that it's, you know, been really awesomely, terrifically useful to be in a school, because we can pretend like we're in a school without too much trouble. I've got these three dates up here, in case you can't see. Can everybody get over there? You got it? It's 1997 and 2001, 2011. Knowing that we're talking about the Harry Potter canon, the book series, the movie series, just as a guess, what would we guess that 1997 represents? Yeah. The first book was published, yeah. First book. And then 2001? First movie. 2011? It's now, right? It's the last movie. So it's baffling to think about this, that Harry Potter has been around for almost 15 years. And I know that 15 years doesn't seem like a long time for some people, but some people here have not been alive for 15 years, right? Some people have been alive for like just about 15 years. That's half of my life ago. Okay, I'm 32. So that's like a huge chunk of my life. And it's weird to think about this, but just to put it in perspective, when that first book came out, I was a senior in high school. Right? I seem really old now. But I thought we'd do like a little bit of a survey or a little bit of input thing like we were in a classroom. So what I'd like you to think about is to look at these three dates and think about what was happening in that year. So when you think about 1997, it doesn't have to be super specific. It can be about your life. It could be about the world in general. What was going on in 1997? Anyone? Dial-up. Thanks, Greg. First thing he thinks of. Anyone else? Dot com, sure. How about something from somebody's personal life? Yeah. Daughter was born. Yay, birth. Somebody else? Yeah. Got married? Married. New business venture. New business. So that, you know, that's a good start. That, the year was marked by beginnings and endings. Like, I ended high school, right? Anne and her husband started a restaurant, and all these great things happened. What about 2001? What's the first thing that you think of? Bjorn. Bjorn was born. Something else? What's that? High school. High school. Bjorn, you already had one. Met my future wife. Cool, cool, cool. I think we are missing one for 2001. 9/11. Right? Cool. 2011. What's happening right now? Somebody? Is something big happening? Hurricane. East Coast hurricane. My parents are in New York. They're fine. Don't worry. Other stuff? What's that? Arab Spring? Oh, yeah, yeah, with the revolutions in the Arab world. Yeah. Spring. Economic collapse. Wow. Isn't it funny how we think about when things are happening today? We think of all the most depressing. Well, not depressing. But like traumatic, like upheaval stuff. You know what I mean? Economic collapse, sure. So, I just do this to put this in perspective. 15 years ago, the world was a way different place than it is today. Like, it's strange to think about it, but things, it seems like when things change or when things end, they change really fast. And then it seems like as we go on, as the world progresses, as time goes forward, seems like things change faster and faster. Doesn't it seem like that? Like, maybe it's because of the internet. Like, to think about dial-up internet, and you'll never hear that dial-up modem sound again, I hope. Or it's like... So, you know, the world changes really, really fast, and that's a long time. And so for a lot of people, maybe there are some people out there who are super nerds like me who sort of get into a series and invest it, and then you sort of mourn because it's all over. And you think, what kind of person mourns the end of a book or mourns the end of a series? But anytime something ends or anytime something changes, I think the first thing we ask is, what am I losing? You know, what am I going to give up? And so I think it's okay that you mourn this stuff, because movies are real for a lot of people. And that's a kind of a bold statement. But movies are tell stories, like Peter talked about last week with The Help. Movies have truth in them, and when they have truth in them, they get a part of ourselves, because we see our own lives on the screen, or we see our own lives in a book. So even if you're not a wizard, which I hope you're not, even if you're not a wizard, it feels like it's a real thing. The characters might not be real, but they weave their ways into our lives. I was thinking about this when the last book came out, when the Harry Potter 7 book came out, Deathly Hallows, my wife and I were living in Monticello, which is like halfway up to St. Cloud, right? And so when the book came out, they were going to release it at midnight. So me and my wife drove over to Walmart at midnight, and we sat in the Walmart parking lot. And we were there, and there's a bunch of people there. And Angie went in to get the book, and I sat in the parking lot, and I thought to myself, I was sitting there, like, behind the wheel of the car, and I was like, what kind of nerd goes to Walmart at midnight to get a book? And then I found my answer, because the doors opened, and the first person out, the first person in Monticello with the book was a 17-year-old boy dressed like a wizard. No offense, Jeremy. Dressed like a wizard who ran across the parking lot going, I got it, I got it. Just run. It's important to a lot of people. I don't need to harp on this. But when you think about these things, I see a lot of beginnings: birth, marriage, new business, meeting someone that you love, starting high school. But for all those beginnings, anytime something begins, I guess we can also think of it as a sort of ending, because for everything to begin, something else has to be finished, I think. Either it's a way of life or it's a way of thinking, but anytime something changes, there's some sort of ending. And I'm not sure there's a difference between an ending and a transition. And you have these fill-in sheets, so on the back of your fill-in sheets, there's like all these blanks, right? And this is the first one there. Because endings, whether they're happy endings, whether they're storybook endings or not, endings stick with us. because, and you can fill this in, endings make a way for what comes next. So anytime we're faced with an ending, it's potentially something new happening. And that's hard to wrap our minds around because all this, you know, even in the Harry Potter world, all of the Harry Potter worlds, all the stories and all of the books have this underlying theme of being thrust into something new that you're totally unfamiliar with and then having to come to terms with it. My friend Kate posted on Twitter, she posted this great quote from Stephen King, and Stephen King says, "Harry Potter is an important series of books because it tells the story of somebody who's thrust into adversity and has to overcome it. Twilight is about how important it is to have a boyfriend." And so... but it's true, you know, Harry Potter's all about being thrust into adversity. Think about the first book. He says, "You're a wizard." And he's like, okay. Goes to a school, has to learn how to be a wizard. And then every year his life gets threatened. He gets challenged. So no matter what your plan... Let me go back a page here. I skipped a page. Meep, boop, boop. So anytime the change comes, we have to make these plans, and then we have to adjust because our plans never seem to work. You know, we can go into life with all the plans we want, but sooner or later there's a wrench that gets thrown into the works. And I'm going to show you a clip. This is a clip from the new movie. This is a clip where they've just found out that Voldemort, who's the super baddie, knows what's going on and what they're doing, and they know they have to go back to Hogwarts, and they argue about how they're going to do that. Let's roll that clip really quick.
He knows. You know who? He knows we broke into Gringotts. He knows what we took, and he knows we're hunting Horcruxes.
How is it you know?
I saw him.
You let him in? Harry, you can't do that.
But Hermione, I can't always help it. Well, maybe I can, I don't know.
Never mind what happened.
Well, he's angry and scared too. He knows if we find and destroy all the Horcruxes, we'll be able to kill him. I reckon he'll stop at nothing to make sure we don't find the rest. Oh, there's more. One of them's at Hogwarts.
What? You saw it?
I saw the castle and Rowena Ravenclaw. It must have something to do with her. We have to go there now.
What? We can't do that. We've got to plan. We've got to figure it out.
Hermione, when have any of our plans ever actually worked? We plan, we get there, all hell breaks loose.
That's true. You know, that happens. You know, you make a plan, you show up, and everything falls apart. And no matter what our lives are like, when we make plans, we're inevitably going to come up against these challenges and these changes. And most traumatic changes, like death, because this isn't a kid's book. Again, we're talking about death here. The most challenging changes in our lives, sometimes they're so traumatic and they're so real to us that they sort of blind us to seeing any sort of way that new life can come out of it. They sort of warp our minds to think that nothing good can ever happen ever again. And like I said, books are real and movies are real. They tell true stories. But no matter what, the things that we experience in this life, I think the movies and books don't hold a candle to that stuff, you know, the stuff that we go through. We heard Jeremy talk about our friend Nate and the stuff that he's going through right now. Think about the people who are sort of in fear of that hurricane. You think about, like, the economic collapse, the transition of power in the Middle East. Those things, they can sort of seep inside us just like a story can. It makes me think about how Jesus dealt with endings and how Jesus talked about death. And the first thing I thought of is the story of Lazarus. And you guys, some people might know this story, some might not, but we're going to read a little bit. So Jesus is out with the disciples, and they're out doing ministry, and they hear that their friend Lazarus is sick. Can we toss that verse up there? I'm going to read really quick. "Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha." And then it gives a little backstory. Mary was the one who anointed the Lord with perfume and wiped his feet with her hair, just to clear that up. And her brother Lazarus was ill. And so we sort of assume that Jesus was good friends with Lazarus. So the sister sent a message to Jesus, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." And Jesus heard it and he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it's for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." And accordingly, although Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. So Jesus encounters death, and he comes in with a plan. And his plan is, this sickness isn't fatal. He says that this isn't going to kill Lazarus. And so not only does he so sure of it that he stays 2 more days before going to visit Lazarus. And then, ba-dum-bump, Lazarus dies. And so we're sort of faced with the question, was Jesus wrong? Or did Jesus have his eye on a plan that was bigger than his initial plan, or what we perceived the plan to be? Let's read the next part, too. Let's jump ahead. So he goes to Mary and Martha, and Mary and Martha each come up to him in turn, and they're like, if you were here, our brother wouldn't have died. What a heavy thing to say to somebody. And say, if you were here, our brother wouldn't have died. And so Jesus came to where Mary was and saw him. And she knelt at his feet and said to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, where have you laid him? And they say to him, Lord, come and see. That's such a crazy thing, because Jesus is usually the one who's telling people, come and see, right? He's usually telling the disciples, drop your nets and follow me. And people are usually saying, come and see Jesus. Like one of the disciples goes to his brother and says, I found the Messiah, come and see. But now, here's Jesus on the receiving end of come and see. So Jesus, his first reaction to that, he's grieving, he's sad. But then he also has this like line that he walks, if he's also really hopeful, and he looks forward. So he says, okay, I'm grieving, I'm sad, where is he? And instead of turning tail and running or leaving town, Jesus walks up to the tomb. Jesus focuses on a plan that's bigger than the initial plan. Do you know what I mean? His first plan was, he's not going to die. When he has to change plans, he's like, all right, let's do it. Let's take care of business. Because, you know, we say, well, that's great, but I'm not Jesus, and I'm not a wizard, and I don't have magic, and, you know, I can't raise people from the dead. And when I see the way Jesus reacts to this, that doesn't really help me. But the thing is that this story isn't really about Lazarus. It's about Jesus, right? For Lazarus, who is dead, and then Jesus stays for 2 days. So Lazarus is in the tomb for 3 days, and then he gets raised again. It's not really about Lazarus. It's about what's going to happen to Jesus in a little while. And in that same way, the raising the dead and overcoming the ends in our life, that isn't really about us either. That's about Jesus. Because Jesus doesn't walk away or avoid death. He comes and he sees, and he sits down in the middle of it, and he approaches the tomb, and he rolls up his sleeves, and he presses on, you know? It's a story about overcoming adversity. I think Harry Potter gets this. I think, if you think it's a nerdy kids book, but I think that Harry gets this. In the face of death in this final book, spoiler alert, Ward, in the face of death in this final book, Harry does something that's wise. And you remember Greg talked about wisdom in the first week of this series. He does something that's counterintuitive, but it makes sense. He approaches death. He goes out to meet it. And then something great happens, and I won't spoil it. Okay, spoiler alert over. You have to go see it and know for yourself. There's another quote that I want to put up there. Let's read the rest of that Lazarus story. I can't leave it hanging. Let's read it. So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked upward and said, Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I've said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so they may believe that you sent me. And when he said this, he cried in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! And the dead man came out, and his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in a cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. And that's what happens when Jesus walks up and rolls up his sleeves. We're unbound. There's a quote from Leonardo da Vinci, and it goes something like this. Hit it. Go ahead and put that Da Vinci quote up there. He says, this is from his diary. They found this in one of his diaries. He says, while I thought that I was learning how to live, I've been learning how to die. And that's a fill-in on your sheet if you want to fill that in. You don't have to. But while I thought that I was learning how to live, I've been learning how to die. And we read this quote, and our first reaction is that it's a bummer. As it's like, oh, he's sort of given up. But I think this might mean something different to us than it might have meant. Or maybe he got it too, maybe Da Vinci got it. But I think it means something different for us, in that when we learn how to die, it's not about giving up. It's about pressing on in the face of death, because changes come, and ends come, and upheavals in the world come. But out of those things, we know that new hope comes too, and new life springs up, and there's births, and there's marriage, and there's love, and there's new ventures, there's new things beginning. And isn't it funny that the further back we go, the things that we remember aren't economic collapses and hurricanes, but they're marriage and births and new things. Endings stick with us because they make a way for what's next, right? Faith means that trusting that God is active. Faith means that trusting that God is active, not only in our living, so not only in our day-to-day life, but in our dying and in our endings. And even when we're blinded, even when we walk through the valley of the shadow of death, we know that God is with us, so we have nothing to fear. As humans, we think that the best way to deal with our endings is to put a stop to them or control them. We want to put a stopper in death. But I think that's the opposite of wise. I don't think that's counterintuitive, but makes sense. I think that is intuitive and doesn't make sense for us to want to control endings of when things happen. And there's a great parable that happens in the first part of Deathly Hallows Part 1. It's this animated short. It's a little bit gruesome, but I think we can watch it here. I think that would be okay. It's called The Tale of the Three Brothers. And it's this parable, it's this children's story in the wizarding world that gets passed down. And it really is, as you watch this thing about it, it really is about how people deal with death. And so let's watch that clip.
There were once three brothers who were traveling along a lonely, winding road at twilight. In time, the brothers reached a river too treacherous to pass. But being learned in the magical arts, the three brothers simply waved their wands and made a bridge. Before they could cross, however, they found their path blocked by a hooded figure. It was Death, and he felt cheated. Cheated because travelers would normally drown in the river, but Death was cunning. He pretended to congratulate the three brothers on their magic and said that each had earned a prize for having been clever enough to evade him. The oldest asked for a wand more powerful than any in existence, so Death fashioned him one from an elder tree that stood nearby. The second brother decided he wanted to humiliate Death even further and asked for the power to recall loved ones from the grave. So Death plucked a stone from the river and offered it to him. Finally, Death turned to the third brother. A humble man, he asked for something that would allow him to go forth from that place without being followed by Death. And so it was that Death reluctantly handed over his own cloak of invisibility. The first brother travelled to a distant village, where with the elder wand in hand, he killed a wizard with whom he had once quarrelled. Drunk with the power that the elder wand had given him, he bragged of his invincibility. But that night, another wizard stole the wand and slit the brother's throat for good measure. And so Death took the first brother for his own. The second brother journeyed to his home, where he took the stone and turned it thrice in hand. To his delight, the girl he'd once hoped to marry before her untimely death appeared before him. Yet soon she turned sad and cold, for she did not belong in the mortal world. Driven mad with hopeless longing, the second brother killed himself so as to join her. And so Death took the second brother. As for the third brother, Death searched for many years but was never able to find him. Only when he attained a great age did the youngest brother shed the cloak of invisibility and give it to his son. He then greeted Death as an old friend and went with him gladly, departing this life as equals.
It's a dark video. It's a cool video. You know, the animation's really cool. It is dark. It's gruesome. But I think that there's a certain darkness and gruesomeness when we try to have power over death, or when we wish we could raise the dead, or those things those brothers do. So I know there's good news coming, don't worry. I know this is kind of a bummer. But what we're going to do is I'd like to take just a few minutes Here's what we'll do. Just turn to a few people around you and maybe bring up this life in 2011. Where have you seen death? Or where have you seen something end? Where have you seen something come to a close? But hopefully, where have you seen something new? So where have you seen new life in these times? And then we'll show a video from the second Harry Potter movie, and that'll call us back together. So just for about 2 minutes, go ahead and turn to your neighbors, and we'll do that.
Professor, sir, your bird, there was nothing I could do. He just caught fire.
Oh, and about time, too. He's been looking dreadful for days. Pity you had to see him on a burning day. Fawkes is a phoenix, Harry. They burst into flame when it is time for them to die, and then they are reborn from the ashes.
So, what would it be like to live as if you knew that the end wasn't the end? Think about that. What would it be like to really live as if you knew that the end wasn't the end? That was really Jesus' invitation to his disciples as he gathered them together that last night for one last meal together with his own physical bodily end looming large on the horizon. It was his invitation to his disciples to trust that even though things were going to get really bleak, right? They're going to look really hopeless. Think cross, think crucifixion. It was his invitation, inviting them to imagine that there is more going on than that meets the eye, right? And that giving them this visible, tangible, tastable, touchable wine and bread was a way to say, I'm here, right? And that no matter where you're at, what point in your pattern of endings and beginnings and endings and beginnings and transitions, no matter where you're at in all of that, that the end isn't the end. Not for Jesus and not for us. And so today, as you come to celebrate in this meal, to celebrate the life of this one whose death really opened the way for our lives, I invite you to come and pick up a phoenix feather. That's what these are. You didn't know there was a real phoenix. Pick up a phoenix feather and take it home and just keep it somewhere that's kind of visible. And throughout your week, let it just remind you of this. Let it remind you that no matter where you're at in life, whatever point this particular service has hit you at, let it just remind you that God isn't just with you in all of this. You know, he is, but he isn't just with you in all of this. He's actually active in your life and in your beginnings and endings in bringing new life out of the ashes of the old. And so I invite everybody, if you're wondering if you're welcome at these tables, by the way, there's 5 tables, so pick the table nearest you. If you're wondering if you're welcome, the answer is yes. Everybody is absolutely welcome to the table. There are no words that have to be said in just the right way to make this thing work, okay? You don't have to say a thing. This is just a meal. The key to this is that this is God's gift in his son Jesus to us. It's not about us, our ability to do it right. It's all about God giving himself to us in his son Jesus. So you're welcome. Just go up to a table. This is, here we have an allergy-free, gluten-free option right up at the front, which incidentally somebody on there wrote on their communication card that this is the first time. Last week we had this option, and it was one of the first times they've gotten to participate in communion. And as a staff, we all went, oh, what a simple thing that we can do to actually make it more inclusive. So if you have other things like that, write them on your cards. It's really helpful to us. But so we have that option here. Just go to a table, grab a hunk of bread, pour yourself a glass of wine or juice, wine, okay, thank you, and just help yourself, and just enjoy the celebration of the life of Jesus, and grab your phoenix feather. Thank you.